Hey, welcome to the Matthew Peterson Show. It's great to have you here again, and it's time. Today, I am going to talk about something that I like. I hope you like it too, but it's really important. We're going to talk about local media disappearing, how that's led to corruption, and what could be done about it. And I'm just kind of giving you, I'm teasing you a little bit with some ideas, hoping that some of you reach out and we can talk in more in depth about solving this problem. I'm hoping some of you point out to me interesting things people are doing to solve this problem, because without regional and local media worth a damn telling you what's going on, things will just get worse, corruption will get worse, and none of us want that. I do think the problem is resolvable, and I do think that I'm very interested in pushing things forward in that direction. And then last, I talk a little bit about the Talent Network and some of what we're doing behind the scenes to bring people together to foster a new commercial cultural movement that gets out from under woke capital and starts to really think in a new direction to build an American way of life worthy of the name in the 21st century. So, you know, small topics, nothing weighty here, but we'll have fun doing it. Let's get on with it. Let's start this show. Hey, so I want to talk about media, digital, and journalism or reporting on events or news when it comes to regions and states. Incredibly important topic. I haven't seen a lot when it comes to solutions for this problem. I just haven't seen a lot that makes sense. There's not really a roadmap for the future. But it's near and dear to my heart and experience, and it's incredibly important. So I throw this out there because if any of you are interested in solving this problem or have ideas, I want to hear them. And for the rest of you, it's going to help you think about what's wrong and with the way things are and what could be and what needs to happen. So let's get into it. First off, in living memory in America, there was a time in which there were lots of local or regional entities that reported on what people in power and government were doing. Now, this is never perfect in any community. There's always corruption. It's always rough and ready when you look at how things really work. You could, if you were naive, think that that was corruption, but, you know, corruption is a little deeper than that. So what I mean by this is that, you know, in typical old school city politics, everyone knows where some of the bodies are buried. There's always some people sneaking around. And then there's a kind of the spotlighted area where it is patrolled by the press. And it's more about what doesn't happen than what does happen. In other words, in the old kind of model, the working model, there were certain no-go zones because you knew you would be reported by your enemies. Sunlight is, you know, the best disinfectant, they say, but really you only get sunlight because some bastard wants to get after some other bastard who's his enemy. No one ever calls a tip line and reveals dirt on their opponent or otherwise if for the sake of the common good. The reason they do it is because they hate so-and-so and there's a factional war, and in the middle of that factional war, stuff gets leaked about, you know, so-and-so doing X, Y, and Z. I mean, that's just how the world works. But you did have patrolled beats by media entities that, you know, ideally, but often in reality, knew something about the region and the players. And yeah, they could be corrupt and, you know, some people they would let off or they wouldn't attack other people they would. It wasn't like the journalism was objective, but it was knowledgeable. And it did take some degree of pride and found some kind of honor in exposing or telling you, revealing what was going on in a given region, a given city, a given town. And of course, the more the merrier, the more you have papers competing with different viewpoints. You know, again, they were never objective. then all of a sudden you really, it's great for the disinfectant because you start to, you know, it's in their interest to show you more about the corruption and what's going on. And the more that you have, you know, these media entities showing you what's going on, the more you can actually have some semblance of healthy democracy, the more you find really better or more talented leaders, because the people who go into office know that, you know, they're trying to win accolades or honor from the media entities and the people. And it's not so much about trying to, you know, get a few bucks in the shadows. It's really about a different class of person who really wants to, is gung-ho and wants to move forward and do really excellent things. So, I mean, that's kind of the ideal old school picture, but there's a lot of truth to it. There really was a time in which there was just way more media focused on state and local affairs. And you're in a place now where you've nationalized and digitized everything. And I can't express to you, you know, anyone who's basically under 40, under 50, may not remember some of this stuff. I can't express to you how important it was and how much focus there was on, say, a state capitol. People, a lot more people paid attention, and they just don't now because they don't have an easy way to get that information, in part because of digital technology. I don't think it's the case that they don't want to know about that stuff. I don't think it's the case. I mean, there is a certain like dumbing down of America. I think it's more though that, you know, you used to just turn on the box with the flickering lights and there was local news and everyone watched it. You didn't have an alternative. So they kind of had you, and it's sort of interesting. Now all kinds of people live every day. They have no idea what's going on in their community, right? I mean, there could be a serial killer at large in their neighborhood, and they really wouldn't know about it unless they heard about it from someone else in person, or it made the national news, right? I mean, so this is a real bizarre thing that I actually don't think will last for long. I don't actually think you can have this go for long without some consequences that might create a redirect or a correction. So what has happened right now is, even in a big capital like Sacramento or Albany, you know, New York and California's their capitals, you've taken all kinds of reporters out. There's all kinds of people who aren't there anymore. They're not reporting anymore. And the idea of, you know, a pretty smart newsman, like a guy who follows City Hall for an old school paper for like 20, 30, 40 years, and that's his career, is almost unthinkable, right? It's not a career that, it's lost its machine, its honor, its prestige. It doesn't kind of exist anymore in the way it used to. So this is an enormous problem. What it's caused is it's gone along with an incredible amount of corruption throughout the system, simply because no one's paying attention. And I used to, investigate this stuff for a couple different ways. And people would ask me to give the power flow in a city, you know, kind of a network map we did once. And this was a huge learning experience. You know, it's really my real red pill 15 plus years ago. But when you look at the flow of power in a city, and you start doing that repeatedly, that led me to a lot of other, let's call them researches. And what's remarkable is, you know, if there's no sunlight, you know what's under the rock before you turn it over, right? You know, if no one's looked under the rock for a long time at the flow of money in a city, no one's paying attention. There's no media entity really, you know, some of these small cities and big urban areas really following it. You know, I think about I'm talking about like a Plano, Texas, or a Upland, California, or, you know, these little cities by in big urban areas. I mean, Plano is enormous itself and it has its own politics, but still for most people, you're not going to get news about that, you know, city council. If you're involved, you will, but no one's going to break that down. There's not the audience there used to be. So what the upshot is, what you know is, if the rock hasn't been turned over in a long time and you turn the rock over, the longer, you know, you go leaving it on one side, the longer you cover up what's underneath, the worse the corruption gets. This is just a take it to the bank principle of human nature. No accountability over a long period of time. You know, it's not just, insects and ant colonies and lizards. It starts to get large. And then you find real snakes underneath the rock after a while, right? I mean, there's all kinds of scarier things with sharper teeth that start burrowing underneath the rock. And you know, again, like when you kick it, you're going to find something. And that's just take to the bank principle. Now, it's really weird how everyone's been psyoped into thinking in some way that, you know, things aren't as corrupt and rough and ready as they are. And almost a Pollyannish vision can lead, or a completely black-pilled vision can lead to some unrealistic expectations. So, but just, you can take this to the bank. All the lack of scrutiny, the lack of media on state and local politics has led to corruption throughout the country in ways beyond what most people understand or imagine. Now, that is, a festering kind of thing. It's grown, but it's also the kind of thing that can be rectified. And it's not the kind of thing that you can't get rid of. In fact, you can. You need authority. You need power. But you also need media. And one way in which power works is simply having a flashlight, right? Simply being able to kick the rock over and then letting the light just fall down and expose it. Everyone sees the problem. Everyone sees the danger and can react. So that's the kind of situation we're in. Now, when you look at what we have now, this ignorance we have of what's going on around us, I want to talk about some ways in which you could get around the challenges that prevent us from having a state and local media that matters. And again, I don't know how to solve this problem. I have lots of ideas about it. I've talked to a lot of people about it. I've kicked over some rocks in my time, but I'm saying this because I want to hear more ideas, and I want to collaborate with people who are really thinking about this and are ready to do something about it, because we could change the game. Let me just go to the importance real quick before we go into some of the themes, the obstacles, and maybe how to overcome them. The importance of this is enormous for the fate of the nation, simply because right now in red state America, there is a belligerence, a buoyance, a lot of energy, a red wave that has, flooded throughout the country. And now is the time in the next few years to start doing the experimental stuff that matters, to start creating new models of how we can live a better way of life together in the towns and cities, strewn across America, whether it's rural, there's different ways we can go, but we need to rethink how we live in the 21st century in America. And we can do that in red states. We can start experimenting in bold and innovative ways. And once people start to get better governance, better way of life in ways that matter, then we shine a light on that with our own media. This is why media is important. And then everyone can imitate it, and these models will spread quickly. We need all kinds of new movements. Some of it's rural, like redeveloping, like they say, redevelop a city. It means like going out to a small town and making it larger on purpose, but in a constructive way where you're actually trying to set something down that lasts for a long time and that provides a great way of life for a rooted people. People desire that. They would be down to pioneer in that way in a variety of aspects, whether that means taking a place like a city like Irving in Texas, and saying, okay, this could go in a number of ways. How do we actually plan in a smart way for all the people who are going to continue to move here and build this into something that's beautiful, that's a model for the rest of the nation in terms of balance, et cetera? I mean, in a bigger context, or whether it's in, the larger city like Dallas, and saying, what is the long-term future of Dallas? The problem is, people thinking about these things? Of course they are. But the way in which they're thinking about them is pathetic. It's all the same crap you get in the universities. It's all the same movements. It's not radical enough. And they sort of divorce it from the deeper way of life questions and make it a quality of life thing. And that's what social science does, right? It doesn't think holistically about the way of life that actually will make you happy? What's going to promote the family? What's going to promote real community? A lot of this is like they break everything up and deconstruct it, and then they use their social science and think they're being smart, and it's boring and it sucks. And that's partly why people don't pay attention to what goes on in local politics. They don't even see the greater importance of some of these things, like the architecture that's around them, all these things that, you know, you could have different solutions for. So the importance of this is enormous, because if we don't have a regional state and local media, you just can't get the word out. And if you look at what's going on now, right and left, say, I mean, if the right had state and local media, it'd be all over. I mean, I think in places like Michigan or, Arizona, if you don't have any vehicles anymore, but these old like TV stations talking to old people, I mean, just lying through their teeth. I mean, there's not even a semblance of any kind of interesting fairness or debate there. That these vehicles are just blinding the people in really dumb ways. So if you could break that monopoly, you would all of a sudden, you would have, I mean, you would turn so much of the country into something way more than a one-party system. You wouldn't have these purple states anymore. They would all go red, I would say, the majority of them. Because the power of just even showing people what's going on locally, why it's important, how it's important, would completely change the political dynamic. And it would make the Republican Party something much better than brain-dead Chamber of Commerce regional Republicanism that generally sucks and has no original ideas. Like you would revolutionize politics in America if you actually took this step or solved this problem of how to engage people with what's going on in their communities and talk about the flow of power and how it relates to their lives and start opening up questions about what a better way of life would look like. So let's go into some of the obstacles. There's a bunch of them, and talk about some possible solutions. One of the big obstacles that's caused this problem is simply people don't give a crap. And you can complain about that. People complain about it less than they used to. They just sort of accept it. You know, why bother? Because it's not irrational, right? If you live in a place where, let's say you live in, the hood in Los Angeles, why would you care about local politics when, for the most part, it's a one-party system? The machine sort of works, its magic, puts people in and out of power. There's not a hell of a lot in terms of options, right, on the table, in other words. It's not really the kind of thing I would call a democracy even. And so, yeah, 12% of the people are going to go out and vote. Like, why would they? They don't see a connection between that and real change. And it's not clear how it affects their daily life, which just kind of stays the same anyway. So there's a certain rational calculus here that sort of makes sense, where you think, well, what is at stake, right? I mean, it doesn't even matter. You might know there's some important issues I care about, and there could be a lot at stake, but how can I change anything? And so what's at stake, and what does it matter? Do I actually have a choice? Is what's at stake, on the ballot in any way? I don't know. It doesn't seem like it, right? Most of the time it seems pretty boring, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one obstacle. Now, of course, the easy solution to that is you gotta actually find out what's important, what is at stake, and if there's real competition in some way, then all of a sudden things get interesting because there's a possibility for change. You gotta convince people there's a possibility for change, though. So that's why, this really becomes important in places where you have some signs of life. You have people getting back involved in local politics. They're pissed off at what's going on in their schools. They want to, they don't want kids to be taught to hate their race. They don't want teachers talking about CRT in the classroom at all. Never mind talking about aberrant forms of sexuality to younger and younger kids, and having basically, pornographic manuals to pervert their minds in your libraries, which are basically in all of your libraries, whether you like it or not, in the public system throughout the country. The ship has already sailed, but people are waking up to it. They're getting pissed off about it. And so, all of a sudden you see these parents and others moving on the local city councils and school board, et cetera. So there, all of a sudden, there's a sign of life. Now people, they do understand that something real is at stake. and that they can potentially change things. So you gotta take that energy, right? And you gotta learn from it in terms of a media apparatus. Parents are very interested right now in what's going on. If you're in a more conservative area or area with a strong conservative presence, my advice would be to start a anonymous or have someone start an anonymous, blog or, social media feed that just does like woke, whatever it is, Southlake, where they conquered the city council. I'd have like woke Southlake, and then start categorizing, have your resident nerd start categorizing all the weird things, the city is doing, or the books in the library or whatever. Like that's the kind of thing that is, you're basically doing media. You're doing the job that should be done by a real media entity, but won't be. And that's the kind of thing that changes people over time. They see the accumulation of evidence, right? And they want to change things. So the next step is, once you see that people care about these issues, a media apparatus that packages that for them, right, and starts to deliver them the information that they want when they already care about it would be nice, right? That would be good. People would be interested. In fact, they would pay for it. I think they'd pay a small amount for it. So you already have some issues that where you can, you really, things can catch on. The other obstacle, though, is that, again, most people find this stuff boring. So you have to be able to describe what's important in a way that relates to them or that they find interesting. So, let's do a couple different examples of this. Like, if I wanted to give you information that I thought was important for people to make decisions about local politics, I would say, okay, well, why don't I first get the numbers, follow the money, right? Why don't I break up the budgets and do comparative budgets for all the cities in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, right? Apples to apples. Try to say, how much do we spend per cop here? How much do we spend on this here? What are we getting out for this over here? Start to look at it like a business perspective, like kind of old school conservative thing. Now, a lot of transparency groups will try to do that kind of stuff, but they do it in a boring way and they don't relate it to things that people can understand or care about. And here's the secret, and for a secret for a new media. People will pay for data that's updated over time. And that's literally what the Wall Street Journal was, right? And the Wall Street Journal survived and was the first to paywall themselves because people used to subscribe and associated it with knowing what those numbers were on Wall Street. This matters. It matters. They would have more data, right? And so they realized that, and they kept their paywall. I remember the publisher I had, to come speak to some people for me. It's a very interesting story at the time. I mean, he made the controversial decision to keep that paywall and keep those subscriptions. And he was able to do that in part, though, because it was associated with data that you wanted to see updated over time. Well, there's always data that relates to your life in local and regional matters. The question is, how do you package it? And you have to package it in a way that makes sense and that is interesting. Here's the problem. That requires doing some work because local government, no government entity, it's in none of their interest to give you the information you need in a way that really shows you what's going on. The entire MO of, any government entity is always going to be able to sort of obfuscate and say like, oh, well, I'm giving you the data, but I'm giving it to you in a meaningless way. So there's always a role in media to translate the gap between government entities that don't want to show you what's going on, reporting numbers that then need to be worked on in order for you to actually get a picture of what's going on. So let me give you an example. An example would be in a lot of communities, there still are, you have to report what money you give to local candidates. Well, most of us, right, don't pay attention to what's going on locally. What do you care? Well, I can make you care. I can talk about why it's important. I'm going to do that in a minute. But here's the problem. You don't have a clear view of what's going on because a lot of times it's not Republican, Democrat even. It's not even clear where these people stand on what issues and what does it matter anyway, right? You don't even know the issues in your local community, some of which matter greatly. But the problem is, if you wanted to know where everyone stood and what side they were on, there's an easy way to do that. You look at who's giving them money, right? If a developer is giving most of the money to one candidate and you're for development and real estate, whatever the developer does, and you think, yeah, we do need more office buildings here, I'm all for that, then you support that person. If the person is supported by the unions, let's say it's the local cops, and firefighters union, where that person stands and you can support them accordingly. They get money from, you know, educational union, right? You kind of know where they stand on things and you can, but if you don't know that, you don't really know the scene. So how do you know that? Well, here's something that newspapers have traditionally done. They could do a lot better job of it. And that's just to report in an interesting way who's getting money from whom. Now, the problem is that it's probably still this way in California. I mean, you know, in order to get that information, you used to have to go and pay 10 cents a copy, 10 cents a page to get them all copied, photocopied, because it wasn't done electronically. It was, you get these disorganized stack of forms that people have filled out. And I gave this money to this candidate. A lot of times they're riddled with errors. They're handwritten and you got photocopies of them that you have to wait for and you have to order from the city clerk. So just think about this, right? We obviously could have a better process to see immediately and do all kinds of cool charts and graphs, you know, where the money is flowing in the city and to which candidates and who's it coming from. Once you do that, a whole world in a world, an entire world opens up as to what's going on in your community. But it's not in anyone's interest who's in power to, you know, reveal that information in some easy way. So the only way to do that in many cases is to have someone put all that information into a spreadsheet and, you know, start to realize, connect the dots between various people. Like, for instance, everyone in the same address is giving a check to a certain city council candidate. And it turns out that address is the address of where the city attorney works. And everyone in his building has contributed to three city council members who, lo and behold, voted for him to become the lawyer of the city. That kind of stuff happens all the time, right? But you're not going to know it unless someone does that translation work with the data, right? I hope I'm not boring you. This is exciting stuff, because if someone does that work for you, and that could be a media entity, that is all of a sudden valuable and it's interesting. Corruption is always interesting, right? So I had an idea once in Southern California for a, I just didn't have time to, too many ideas. I didn't have time to pursue it, but a lot of people in media loved it and wanted me to, you know, take the show on the road. It's just, I wanted to make money, not beg people for money. But the idea was to do a, I think it still could be done, to do this very carefully. But the idea was to show local corruption, to do like a season in a city where you have people go undercover, like to catch a predator, and you don't pretend you're the FBI, but you get people right to the point where they're doing something shady on a city council or whatever. And you have to do this very carefully, because if you attack the wrong people, A, you can get killed, but B, like, you can get destroyed by higher ups in a way where, you know, this is the other thing here. Everyone knows where the corruption is. Like, it's all like, the Untouchables movie, the old Untouchable movie with Sean Connery. In many cases, everyone knows where, you just can't go do that. You just can't barge in. In the movie, Kevin Costner is trying to catch Al Capone. And, you know, everyone knows where he is and what he's doing. The question is, are you going to count the cost of going to war with that entity? And the truth is that in real life, at any time and place, there's all kinds of monsters you just can't go and attack unless you want to get killed for no reason. You have to pick your battles. And it's very much true now. So the kind of, you know, how do you start simply to start, you know, exposing it? What kind of media could you do that could be successful? Well, what if you had a reality show that goes after like really small time stuff, but super interesting characters, like the kind of guys who like leave $10,000, you know, behind the toilet seat in the little, you know, little Mexican restaurant and think they're tough guys. And I mean, there's a lot of these people are characters. A lot of them are hilarious. And you go after the people that no one's really going to mind, right? I mean, you'll stir up some controversy, but especially if it's a one party system, it doesn't matter so much. Nip around the edges at it, right, on purpose, but make it really interesting, like To Catch a Predator, and do a season in a city, you know, and then you release that. Again, very carefully have to be done, but the stories are there, the people are there. Anyone who kind of knows the scene is a smart consultant, could help you navigate a little bit. And what you would uncover would be, you know, controversial. You could see the lawsuits in a way that would be good. That's the kind of thing that could be very interesting. People are interested in the corruption. They know, again, most widely shared fear in America is the fear of government corruption, but they don't know how it works. So doing a little bit of reality and a little bit of like explaining how that works could be, you know, very, very interesting to people. And you can do that in a graded way. you can't start by attacking the kingpins, right? It's just not gonna, it's not gonna work. Plus, when you get up to the top levels, corruption is totally legal. It's done in a way where no one has to worry about, you know, the cash is just sent in large amounts to the bank in a transaction that's perfectly legal. And that's how the whole thing works. So these bite-sized chunks, though, are ways to move forward. So what I'm saying is, you know, a few things just to summarize. A lot of the obstacles, you know, are real that I've discussed so far, but you can see different ways in which they can be overcome. So I'm suggesting that both in terms of entertainment value, you could do some radical things. A friend of mine has talked about like a game show to gamify like state and local news. That's the kind of idea, that's the kind of thinking. You could try that stuff out because people are interested in these issues. You can see them after the 2022 elections being interested in them, but also they're just interested anyway if you just present it the right way, in an interesting way, where they understand how these things relate to them. The news is so bad now, as is state and local, it's all just propaganda or advertising. Like there's really nothing, there's no soul left to any of it. It's all just libtard stuff or worse, just like advertising. So lots here. Let me go back to, so you can be really entertaining in different ways. Corruption is entertaining. Gamifying it is entertaining. And then you can also, as I'm suggesting, you want subscription money. I think over time that's going to become from whoever like translates the data that's official and renders it usable or verifies data that you change out over time. That's important. So to go back to the city budgets. You have a bunch of city budgets, they're not put out in a way where you can compare apples to apples. If someone does that in a way that matters and that gives you very practical information that updates over time about like where the best place to buy a house would be based on these metrics, and that's the journalistic entity that covers the region, and it gets those numbers, not just regurgitating them from the government, because that will never be useful, but like translating them in the way that I'm talking about, you start doing that with the flow of money throughout, say, the Dallas-Fort Worth area or the, you know, big metropolitan areas, and you put that all in a database, that's incredibly useful. And it just, the pictures just pop right out. You find out who the major players are, who's actually giving these politicians money, right, legally. And immediately the stories write themselves and people start to get more interested. I'm throwing out these ideas as fast as I can, as you can tell, to give you some inkling of all this. I don't have the organized white paper in my head. I used to. I could put it together. But I just want to give you a sense of the kind of thing I'm thinking. Now, to look at the real future, you know, the blockchain, Web3, whatever you want to call it, crypto future, there surely is a place for digital networks, verified accounts, people who are perhaps, you know, also pseuds, who are just quietly writing about what's going on, who develop reputation and trust over time and are rewarded by the crowd. So you can also see this model emerging where there could be potential scribes that you want to subscribe to, at least certain larger entities want to subscribe to in larger areas, because they want to know what the hell is going on and what they have to navigate within the city. And so someone starts like laying out like what's going on and the importance of it. And you could see a crowd of people, you know, crowdfunding them because they like what they're laying down. Basically, your localized journalism Substack. That's something that you sort of kind of see. I could potentially see more of that. I think the big problem is that most people don't know how the system works and don't know how to relate it to people. And everyone's very confused about why they should care at all. And you'd have to have someone who can navigate those waters. But I don't think that, you know, this will go on forever. I do think that people like that will emerge, are emerging. And as the corruption gets worse and worse, because no one's paying attention at all to what's going on in City Hall or the schools, you know, eventually it gets bad and then people go, what the hell? And they get back interested. Again, what's missing is the media apparatus that actually pays for itself. That's not just a nonprofit that allows you to shine a light on what's going on in these towns and cities and counties and whatever. So no one has resolved this problem. No one has solved how any kind of local, regional, state media that tells you what's going on and holds people accountable, what the business model is right now. And it's still in flux, and it's been in flux for a while now. And the old papers, I mean, unless they really transitioned into something else, you know, first off, there's fewer and fewer newspapers, of course. Unless they transitioned into something else, I just don't see them surviving. I don't see anyone caring after a certain generation just runs out. Now, they're still playing this role that's needed. You need something to tell you what's going on in your region, your community, and you need something that curates and credentials, you know, stories, ideas, and people. So, you know, we're not there yet, but you can see the different ways in which you could experiment in order to get there. I'm giving you you know, some insight into what I think is necessary. So there's always important data. Updating that over time is important. People will subscribe. I've said this before on this show. The scribal person, the person who's the scribe for the region, who sort of takes the place of the old newspaper editor who knows everyone and just starts recording over time the same kind of theme stuff and informing people of like what the history of the city is in real time, that stuff will be rewarded in a digital space. I think that will be needed. And then if it's a more than a person, like a brand, you know, then it's like verified in a different way. I can see that coming back. It's just, it's not going to be in the same form it was with the newspaper ads, you know, and the classifieds like supplying this all. It's just not going to be in the same way in this random physical object that comes to your house every day. That's probably enough. I mean, if this interested you at all, you're already activated and you can get back to me. I've heard pitches from various people, various ideas over the years, some of them bad, some of them good. What I haven't seen, though, is anyone really taking the shot and doing the experiment in a way where it's, you know, looks promising and started to work. And again, most of the problem is people aren't political enough, or they're not entertaining enough. And so they're like boring goo-goo, you know, good government transparency people, or boring sort of technocrats who are trying to make money, and they don't understand the human element here of what you're trying to accomplish. Yeah, and that's an enormous problem. And I firmly believe there is an enormous amount of potential success someone could have here. And we need a lot more people experimenting in this space. And if we don't, we will lose, we'll lose the country ultimately, because we need a media that's going to show these models and experiment with different ways of life that actually lead to health rather than despair, decline, and all the garbage you see today. Let that be all for this topic. There's plenty more to say, but I have said enough. A lot of people who either want to invest in the kind of commercial cultural movement I'm talking about have been contacting me. We are going to do this in a more organized way in the future, and we're working on that. And a lot of people with pitches, right, who want to create new things in the kind of space I'm talking about and are looking for investment, also will contact me. I can't respond to everyone. We're going to do this in a more formal way, creating some structures that will help everyone concerned in the future. But I encourage you, if that is you, don't hesitate to reach out, because we are actively working on this behind the scene. And although I can't necessarily respond or help everyone, there's certain projects that I'll pick up and try to place with other people. You'll see more from us on basically, you know, bringing together entrepreneurs and investment to move in this space as we go. You can contact us, newfounding.com, contact me on Twitter, DOCMJP, just go to the website and sign up for New Founding, and you're going to get into a lot of this, especially if you become a member at a certain level. Second, even more generally for most people, the Talent Network. I got to talk about this, newfounding.com/talent. We've been doing this informally for a while, but this is our, you know, practical little product, starting out to really connect people who A, want to hire, you know, talent that's out there that wants to break away from, you know, the big woke corporate. And I have to say, I don't know, some people don't realize how many people who are, insanely, you know, talented or have great experience in exceptional sort of positions want to leave and do something more interesting. Sometimes they just want to get their feet wet a little bit and quietly behind the scenes, you know, help out with other businesses or projects that maybe they grow and eventually they'll go over to it. But you know, this is a thing. Like, you're looking at people who, some of them are, you know, senior, in their 60s or 70s, who want to get out of Big Blue City and move somewhere. You would be surprised. You know, the age range is all over the place. The kind of talent I'm talking about could be tech, finance, media, but it's also all over the place. And you just never know. And you never know who's thinking of in this moment, you know, really disrupting the scene by building something that just moves towards a more human way of life and takes down the old woke, you know, corporate colossus that's grown up over time and is fat and lazy and needs to be taken down. So the Talent Network, we've already done this. I mean, we've already connected, you know, hundreds of people who, just informally, but I can't even, I don't know what the, you know, grand max total of who we've touched is, but it's a lot. It's enough to see us, this value proposition is there. So you go to newfounding.com/talent. If you want to work, you want to join teams building the dynamic enterprising organizations of the 2020s, get the hell on board, see the opportunities, go ahead and sign up. You want to hire people who are values aligned, who see the world the same way you do, are engaged in that mission to change it, and really want to disrupt things. And you would be amazed at the people who possibly want to work with you or help you in some way. That is the basic premise, just square one, you know, ground zero, new founding. We can match that talent. We can match the investors and the entrepreneurs, but at the very basic level, we can match work and hire. We also want you to refer people to us. That's really important. So you can also get on there and refer people and help them get out of the Borg if they're still stuck within it. This is more than just like a thing I'm shilling, right? This is kind of the core value proposition of what we do. We curate, we credential in a new environment. We reestablish a trust network, trust in the digital era. And the very basic level, that's going to be helping people connect talent-wise. And brokering, you know, these kinds of deals and partnerships and arrangements is something that we've always been about. And we're, you know, we're here to help with if we can. And it's an organizational problem, right? I mean, at scale, how do you bring these people out and build a new movement? That's what's going on here. Trust is something that we have to reestablish. We have to reestablish a community based on trust. In a society in which, you know, trust has, you know, my co-founder Nate's been talking about this all the time, trust has rapidly, you know, disintegrated. And so trust is something we earn, we have earned, and we will earn over time. But then the obstacle is actually organizational. Once you bring the right people together and you earn that trust and increasingly figure out ways to digitally sort of prove it and allow people to earn trust online, which is what some of the platform is all about. This is core to what we do, right? And the organizational problem is, how do we connect more and more people in ways that make sense? So anyway, you're interested in any of that, newfounding.com/talent, newfounding.com, check out what we're up to, become a member if you like it. You can see some of other projects on there that are interesting. I hope you have a good rest of your day. You know, we remember, like, we need you alive. We need you limber. We need you sober. We need you in the game. So stay in it. Keep it up. We'll see you next time.